The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another Kiefer and Curry. We just kind of pick stuff that kind of is interesting to us, and we used to go kind of back and forth. We talked everything from men's relationships to music to certainly we talk a lot of sports. Sometimes we'll just look at the early card and college football. But today I want to talk about what's it take and how much more difficult is it now to be a fan than it used to be.
Interesting.
So I just came back from a meeting this morning. I know you had meetings this morning, and three of the people that I was meeting with were Auburn friends and Auburn fans. Ugh. And I said, first of all, let me just apologize for what. And they're like, I don't want to hear from you. You're not an Auburn fan. I said, no, listen, it's not that I'm not an Auburn fan. I wish the best for everybody. I've always made my money off Alabama. We were the flagship station for Alabama football for years. And so I always made my money. So I was always, you know, I was a fan where I got paid. But I always hope the best for Auburn. And I have a lot of my friends who are big Auburn fans and friends, and particularly one, Aldo Greco, who I know just lives and dies with that Auburn contingency. And I said, yeah, you had a rough weekend, right? And they were just like, they're like, I don't even know why we're fans anymore. And they were like, you know, we're sitting here ready to kick off our basketball season with a coach that no one even knows. They didn't even realize that Bruce's son was on the staff. And now we go from a guy who was supposed to take us to a national title to giving the job to his son, who's never coached a basketball game in his life. And now we don't have a head coach. And the only reason they fired that coach was because if they didn't, it was going to end up being like the 18th or 19th best job out there. Right now, you can make an argument that Auburn wants to go after Rhett Lashley. Rhett's got no reason to leave SMU, my friend. I got news for you. I can't believe I'm saying this. SMU is a better job than Auburn right now. If 10 years ago,
he got an extension this week.
He did. And he knew that job was going to be opening up. So you think he's going to leave? No, he's a Mulls Allen guy. He's not leaving SMU. They're rebuilding the place up there. They have a shot at going to the playoffs. Auburn doesn't. You have a better shot at being a Group of Five team than you do in an SEC team. Now, is it going to pay? No. So from a fan standpoint, I was thinking about this. If you're an Auburn fan right now, you're just lost. You're like, what the hell just happened? I mean, we had Hugh Freeze, who had knocked off Saban in back-to-back years. I know your take on this. That's why he was hired. He couldn't get Lane Kiffin. And you got Hugh Freeze, and you may not like that. You got Bruce Pearl. You're going to Final Fours, and you feel like, okay, finally you're competing. Nick Saban just hung it up, so you don't have to worry about him anymore. And all of a sudden, 2 years later, you got no head coach at either one of your programs. You're fixing to turn into the Kentucky and Vanderbilt of the league. I'm sorry to tell you, you got to have another buyout. And I'm thinking to myself, how difficult is it? And so I'm watching, oh my gosh, I'm watching that Bengals Bears game yesterday. Oh my gosh. And I almost wish I hadn't seen it on Red Zone, because it made it even worse. The Bengals have been to three Super Bowls. They've lost all of them. I don't even pretend to think the Super Bowl is ever going to be in their closet. But watching that game yesterday, I told my son, I said, this is not even football. You can make all the analogies you want about, you know, Madden 26 or whatever. That was the biggest joke as a football fan, to see how bad that defense, that is a defense that makes millions of dollars every single play, to see that bad of a showing week in and week out. It's the first football team, I think, since 1966 or something, that has scored like 38 plus points and has lost back-to-back weeks.
Lost both games.
As a fan, and you're sitting there and you're like, dude, I'd rather lose by 40 every week than to come back down 14 with a minute and a half left, come back with a 41-year-old who threw 470 yards, take the lead with 54 seconds left, and lose that way. I said, I don't, as a fan, I don't even know how to absorb that. And I'm not a season ticket holder. Okay, I lived there 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I can imagine a person who's invested, who has bought season tickets, who's got a van that's painted orange, who goes out and spends thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of my hard work money to go out there and every year pretend that my team's going to win a Super Bowl. It would drive me crazy. And now, just as your fair weather fan, I can't afford the $160, $170 tickets. I used to love the wash-up games for Alabama because I could go to a Middle Tennessee State game with my son and actually get in for $40 or $50. Now I can't even afford that. But I just want to, what's it like being a fan? You've been like the consummate. You are a huge fan. But if you're a Rockies fan or a Brewers fan or a Falcons fan or a Sabres fan or a Bills fan or a Nets fan or a Jazz fan, yes, all those teams have never won a championship. What's it take to be a fan in sports today?
Yeah, I tell you what, and you know, just to pile on a little bit from a neutral standpoint of what you went through yesterday, this wasn't against the Bills or the Chiefs or the, you know, the premier teams. This is against the Chicago Bears, whose offense has been pedestrian at best the last couple of years. So this was another mediocre team that was doing this to you. That's got to just drive you absolutely insane.
It's crazy, and it was funny because they
and last week it was worse. It was the Jets.
The Jets. Yeah, a team that was 0-7, by the way. And then you get the Bears coming in, and they made that last drive, the one that put them up 46-42, 47-40. That was the drive of the day, and I'm like, no, that's not the drive of the day. That's anybody can do that against that defense. That is the worst defense. If there's one thing we got right, that is the worst defense maybe in the history of the National Football League. And I'm not kidding you. It could be.
And this, you have to this ask yourself historic. Why. I don't think the personnel is that bad.
It's been bad for 3 years. Three years.
So it's got to go back to the same thing that we see week after week. And it's like any other business or any other organization. It all emanates from the leadership and the decision makers. You know, you can blame the employees, who in this case are the guys on the field, but they all come in with a lot of credentials. But the secret is, once again, in these organizations, you've got to have the right blend of people and the right kind of people to make any venture work. And clearly in Cincinnati right now, something is horrendously dysfunctional.
It's unbelievable. And you know, you sit there and say, well, you know, it's parity in sports. It's like, you know, you can go from 4-12 one year to 12-4 in the National Football League. And if you watch the red zone, you see, and it's crazy. I mean, we saw it with Carolina win yesterday. I get that.
Yeah, look at the Commanders. Yeah. They had a dream season last year. What a playoff game. And that was the biggest blowout of all time.
Unbelievable. And I get that. I get that. I understand how it's all about matchups. We should all know that you always say, you know, you're always going to take an SEC team plus double-digit points in college football. Maybe it's a little disparity's a little bit more so in college.
Happened again this week with Kentucky.
Exactly. Yep. Maybe the disparity's a little bit more in college because you're talking about younger players as opposed to players who are getting paid millions of dollars. But from a fan standpoint, it's like you want to jump off. I was born in Cincinnati, so I have to be a fan. I'm excited about the baseball team next year. But from a fan standpoint, and now we're talking NIL, we're talking transfer portal stuff in college football. I don't even know. A lot of my friends were NASCAR friends. I used to follow NASCAR. And about, I don't know, 10, 12, 13 years ago, when the money started flooding into NASCAR, all of a sudden, I knew who my DuPont guy was. I knew that I knew who drew the Budweiser car. I knew whoever drove the Haviland car. I knew whoever, and those guys had relationships with these people for years. Now, every single year, you have drivers going from one side to the other. I can't even keep track of them anymore, and the money just ruined the sport for me. I know I'm going all over the place here. I'm just, from a fan standpoint, sports are so important to me. I've done it in my entire life. And watching that game last with the Bengals, just, and it was so funny because I'm sitting there with my son. We were texting back and forth, and I saw my guys, they just scored. And I was like, exclamation, when he's like, not so fast, Dad. And I said, Santo, it's 54 seconds left, son. I said, listen, I said, even this defense can't screw this up. Because I told you, and I was like, it's unbelievable. And then to throw my Auburn contingency and to see their faces this morning, they're like, you know, I don't even know what I'm not even proud to say I was an Auburn Tiger. I even went to school there. I mean, it's such a joke, but you're right. It starts from the top. How come, now you can say Tom Brady won, but look at the teams that have been dynasties or teams that continually year in and year out are really, really competitive. Kansas City Chiefs, I think you could certainly make that argument. They're good. Why can't we have more teams, even at a mid-major level in Major League Baseball, why can't we have more teams that are just more competitive year in and year out. I don't know why that is. Is it all coming from the top? Is it all management?
You know, that's a fascinating question if you try to break it down, because you do have really consistent teams that year after year. You don't have many teams in the professional ranks, and we'll talk about college in a minute because it's a different dynamic. But in the professional ranks, you have these teams that are, I mean, you always know they're going to be competitive. They might slip up a little bit one year and have a less than stellar year. But right now, you know, it's the teams, and for football purposes, you know, it doesn't go much further to me. And this might seem, you know, really kind of shallow, but the quarterbacks of these teams are so critically important. And you see that with your own team, with the Bengals. With Joe Burrow down, it's almost like the whole organization slumps its shoulders and says, we're screwed. We're, you know, our leader's not here, our dynamic player, the alpha dog on our team is not here. Because if you take Mahomes away, or we watched Josh Allen yesterday, this guy is phenomenal. What a warrior. Buffalo's got a subpar defense. They've got a lot of problems, but the guys at the very top, and you just mentioned Brady, all those years as we watched Belichick flounder at North Carolina trying to enhance his legacy, all he's doing is completely destroying it, because now everybody doesn't even whisper it anymore. Oh, that run for New England was Brady, not Belichick. And if you look at it in football, I just think that position is so critical, because it's not even just the offensive side of the ball, but defenses respond and play up to a level of that. Now, let's talk about Joe Flacco yesterday. My goodness, I laughed at that sign, at that trade, and you turned out to be right. You said you still thought he had some football in him, and he's a Hall of Famer. All he's doing right now is confirming that. Yeah. Where I would have told you a couple weeks ago, yeah, I think he's borderline. I am so impressed with what Flacco's done, because I thought he was 41 years old. He hadn't done anything significant in 6 or 7 years in the league. I mean, he had some pretty good stats, but what he's doing for the Bengals should inspire that defense. It's got to be a mixture of personalities on that side of the ball that, you know, are just there to collect the check. I mean, it just comes down to that. Football's still a game of passion and devotion. And when you've got a unit really underperforming, you got to start questioning. You know, again, I call them employees before, because they're the group that you assemble to put on your show or to run your business, whatever it might be. But if you don't have complete buy-in and dedication from those people, which starts from the leadership assembling the right people and training them the right way to perform, then, you know, you're going to have a less than stellar product. And I think so many of these organizations in pro football, you know, you can go back to these real stable franchises that are rolling right along. The folks in Kansas City and Buffalo, you know, some of the other more stellar franchises, Green Bay's been a longstanding, you know they're going to be competitive every year because they do the right things and run their organizations the right way. So it's a real long-winded answer, but I think it's like any other organization. You've got really outstanding ones and really ones that don't know what they're doing.
Well, wouldn't you think that the National Football League would be more consistent as far as in what teams year in and year out are pretty decent as opposed to college, just because you're talking about, first of all, the number of kids, you're talking about the age of the kids, you're talking about how inflexible that college football can be because of, particularly now with the NIL and the transfer portal. You know, you were talking about teams like, I was trying to go through every sport. I'm going to do a little exercise with you. It's not always about the money. It's not always about the money. College football, we talk about blue bloods. But year in and year out right now, just off the top of your head, give me college football teams, you know, year in and year out that are going to be somewhat competitive every single year.
Yeah. I mean,
Alabama, Georgia, USC, of course, USC. When I say competitive, I mean I'm talking about not going like 6 or 7 years with a losing record. I'm talking about year in and year out. They're going to be, you know, Tommy Tuberville, for God's sakes, at Auburn. Believe it or not, he was. I called him the 8.9 man. He was good for 8.9 victories every year. He couldn't win more than that, but he wasn't going to lose more than that. And that's what you went with. You went with 8.9 victories a year. Yeah. That looks pretty damn good right now. You knew year in and year out the Auburn Tigers were going to be competitive. Now it's out the window. And so I think about those. And now go to the National Football League. You already gave me Green Bay. You gave me Kansas City. I could throw the
Buffalo.
I could throw the Chicago Bears in there. Maybe Philadelphia has been pretty good over the last.
San Francisco. They've been kind of the
New England's back. Believe it or not, New England's back. I mean, we thought they were just going to fall apart forever, but they're back.
Yeah, I mean, and it's still too early to declare them back because, you know, football is such a weird game. You've got to have not only great players, you have to have the right combination of players. You have to have guys that understand their roles and buy in and do the things to make the team win. But I think in this era of so much money at all levels of sports, you've got a lot of guys who are just playing for the money. And in team sports like football especially, if you just get a couple of bad pills, look at Penn State this year. People, you know, and Clemson,
wow,
two teams that were, you know, touted as national championship contenders. These were teams in the top four.
What the hell happened to Clemson?
These teams, Tony, have both lost five games already.
My son was driving home during the Clemson game, and I thought he was going to start crying. I said, "I'm so sorry, honey." I said, "How in the hell does a team look that bad against Duke when you've got a Hall of Fame coach who's won two national titles?" I mean, I can't get I
at home.
It's
they've had
too
many meltdowns at home. I mean, that just can't happen. Penn State the same way. But you just, you know, with all this player movement and everything that's going on, if you get just a couple of pieces that just aren't quite right, it can screw up the whole deal in football because it's the ultimate team game. Football is mimicked after military history. That is what the game is based on. It's about acquiring territory, taking turf, you know, imposing your will on the enemy. That's what football's based on. If you're in a battle, Tony, and you've got two or three weak links, that could be the difference of you triumphing or being, you know, wiped out as a unit. And football is the same way, and I don't think people really appreciate, yes, the stars are going to win you some games, but it's the guys in the trenches and the role players and everybody else. It's got to be this collective kind of group effort. And I think we've just got enough instability right now, especially in college football, where that can go horribly wrong in just the blink of an eye.
All right. So this is kind of fun. I like doing this. Give me NHL teams year in and year out. You always know they're going to be competitive. Who?
Yeah, I mean, in modern day hockey, the Edmonton Oilers franchise in the middle of nowhere,
forever,
Western Canada, you know they're going to be good every year, and that was a tradition that started back when Wayne Gretzky was playing and Mark Messier. They had some of the greatest players in the world, and it's just the institution of that team, and it doesn't always last that long. For years in hockey, it was the Montreal Canadiens were the absolute standard. The Canadiens were the team every year that was going to win or be the favorite to win the Stanley Cup, just like the Yankees in baseball for decades were the gold standard. You know, you can probably pick the Boston Celtics back in the day.
Yep.
All those championships with Brett Auerbach and Bill Russell.
And now you're doing our whole thing for us, because I was going to go sport by sport. Just give me some teams. Okay, so you got NHL. So give me NHL, because I want to hear these.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay.
So the Oilers are certainly a standard. You've had different standard bearers in recent years. The Pittsburgh Penguins had a fantastic run where they had about a 15-year period where they were going to be one of the top 2 or 3 point teams. And now you've got to throw the Florida Panthers in there of all places. In the hockey capital of Sunrise, Florida, Metro Miami, they've won back-to-back Stanley Cups, and the Tampa Bay Lightning across the coast had done that earlier in the decade. So those are some of the staples right now in hockey that you know are going to put a really good team on the ice every single year.
Major League Baseball may be the most skewed based on the financial aspect of it. You just saw a team that spent five times more money than anyone else just win. And again, Toronto was number four, by the way. And that, talk about, dude, if you're a Toronto fan, I'm so sorry. You had a guy in third with one out. I hated the fact they bunted him over because if you got a guy on second and you got nobody out, a single brings him home. Don't waste an out. Anyway, that game was excruciating if you're a Toronto fan. And I know that several people in our little group had Toronto in that particular game. But baseball, Cincinnati, undeniably big red machine. Year in and year out, believe it or not, they think they can win a World Series. And I think a lot of it has to do with the manager. The manager's everything. When Dusty Baker was there, they had a chance. Terry Francona is going to bring them a pennant. He is. He wins wherever he goes. It's not always about the money. The Atlanta Braves, year in and year out. I know this year was an anomaly, but they're year in and year out. They're always competitive. The Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees. I'm trying to think of some other teams that just year in and year out. And a lot of it has to do with the money. The Dodgers. But then you look at some other teams like, you know, the Padres, the Brewers, the Rockies, never won a championship. Give me – this is the easiest one because we got college hoops. And I was trying to figure out some way we could talk about some college hoops. So let's do it right now. Give me the Blue Bloods of college basketball. Every single year you know they're going to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky's the gold standard, and when they had one subpar season, Calipari had to go.
Yep.
He had gotten them there every year, and then they actually had a, God forbid, a non-competitive year where they weren't, you know. And I think that's the best way to answer your question. When the fan base is disappointed at the end of the year, if a team has got a winning record, but the bar is set at winning or at least playing for a championship, yep. And that's the standard. That's when you know you're in that kind of realm. Mm-hmm. When it's a disappointing year to go a long way and be denied. I think Alabama fans are probably on that plateau. It's a disappointing year if you don't win the SEC and you don't win the national championship. It's we had a disappointing year.
And that's what makes it so hard to be an Auburn fan right now, because if I asked you 10 years ago, is Auburn a basketball school, first of all, you'd laugh. Or say, does Auburn ever have a shot at winning a national title? 10 years ago, we'd laugh at that. They had a shot. Now your coach left. I don't know. That the whole thing was weird. I don't know if there's some type of probation coming out at Auburn. I don't know what's happening, but the Bruce Pearl left in the middle of the night. That was really weird. Something's coming down. I'm sorry, but you're fixing to get hammered by the NCAA on something else. I don't know why, because that doesn't happen. He's not old enough to leave yet. He has plenty more in the tank. Something's going on with Bruce Pearl anywhere. But you know, you look at Florida, you look at UConn, you look at Louisville. My Xavier Musketeers, year in and year out, you know, they're good for 22, 23 games, regardless of what, you know. And so I try to look at all those teams and I try to think, okay, what do all these teams do to make their fan bases happy and to consistently just compete year in and year out, so at least your fan base feels like you have a shot at winning a title? And I don't know what that is. Is it the manager? Is it the money? Is it the facilities? I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and you know, you can't abuse your fans either and expect them to continue to support
something that
is not, and then the Auburn situation is screaming that, because you've got a lot of guys that kind of run the show from the back room. We don't need to mention any names, but there's two prominent ones. Yep. And this is the latest group of something that's been going on at Auburn forever. You've had the same thing at Texas, which is all run by the boys with the brandy snifters and the cigars in the back room. And, you know, at the end of the day, You just take the fans for granted that they're just going to be there. You know, Auburn Nation's going to be there to support whoever you put out there. And, you know, with bad decision after bad decision, I think you touched on it at the beginning. I think Auburn's now paying four different coaches that have departed in the last 10 years. It's like a turnstile there.
Yeah, Florida's paying three. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. It really is.
I mean, I think they just now have settled up with Gene Chizik, but they had to pay Gus Malzahn to go away. They had to the disastrous, horrendous hire of Brian Harsin,
oh my God,
who may be one of the worst college coach hires of all time, because the guy just didn't want to do the job. He didn't do all the little things necessary. So then they reach out to Hugh Freeze. Again, resume-wise, he beat Nick Saban 2 years in a row. And at Auburn, that's like the absolute gold standard. But, you know, Hugh was winning at Liberty. But Hugh left the Ole Miss program in a shambles. They were on probation for 4 years, violated all kinds of NCAA violations, not to mention his personal integrity was very questionable, with using university credit cards to arrange for escorts and things of that nature, which you insist, despite the fact that there were 17 of those calls, they were all mistakes. He was just dialing the wrong number.
Yeah, exactly. What did he get, $14, $15 million? He gets,
he's going to get $2 million. He's going to, by his contract, they're going to pay Hugh Freeze now $2 million a year for the next 8 years to go away.
I don't know. From a fan standpoint, it's just such a weird time. The great thing about being a fan, too, is, you know, we talk about fair weather fans. We talk about fanatical fans. We talk about fans that jump off. Ultimately, man, it has a lot to do with where you're born. It has a lot to do with what your mom and your dad rooted for when you're growing up. But it's such a weird, interesting time to be a fan in all of sports right now, particularly since it's so damn expensive. And then just to have your hearts ripped out of your chest year in and year out by some of the same people that we just all go all in on. It's just really, really, really difficult. All right. We had a monster week this week. Another starting lineup, ABC 3340. Of course, the college football games that have been on after has been fantastic. We've been just a wonderful.
Man, the ABC schedule has been just off the charts.
Yeah, we've been a great walk-in for that. Kicked off this past week with Texas and Vanderbilt. We saw some true colors there, too. So we're going to get after it again this week. And of course, we're having another get together. We're doing this at the Birmingham Race Course on Tuesday night for about 4:35. I'll try to make it out there. I got the kids this week, but I'll try to make it out there. But it's going to be another fantastic week. And I know you're super busy as well. So I'm going to let you fly. Enjoy. College Hoops starts tonight. And you and I will catch up tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock Central, on K4 Wins. K4 Wins. We're
looking forward to that. Yeah. And don't forget, starting this week, we're going to have the unveil of the College Football Committee's top 12 teams right now, which is the most ridiculous thing. I can't wait, because I'm going to counter on all my social media. I'm not going to compete with that clown show who gives the most deserving teams and the teams that pulled at our heartstrings a playoff spot. I'm going to start rating each week, Tony, the 12 best teams in the country, and we started that last week.
We did,
I got to publicly apologize. I had Georgia Tech on my list, and they revealed their true colors this week. So I've got it revised. I've got a couple surprises on mine, but I'm going to release that every week as my counter to this playoff committee, because the charter of this committee is to select. Get ready for it. The 12 best teams
not deserving
in the country.
Not deserving.
And they
the
have
best.
Not done that in the first couple of years of this process.
Hey, would you let me ask a question. Would you be okay? Because we know how to find the best. Would you be okay if we put an algorithm in Las Vegas to find out which 12 teams actually are the best teams? Now people are like, oh, they're just putting a line out there. Bullshit. The line's out there to tell you exactly what you think is going to win by what. Now, I know it's based on personnel. It's based on matchups. It's based on this, that, the other. But, I mean, Vegas gets it right. There's a reason why we have smelly fishes. But if you did that, I can promise you, I'll promise you that every year they'd have 12 different teams. You'd have the 12 best teams, but you would have 12 different teams than the teams that we vote in every single year through this. There would be one or two teams. Now, you wouldn't have some group of five teams make it in. SMU may not make it in. Maybe you would. Indiana, I don't know if they make it or not. But, I mean, you would know just based off And that'd be a great question we could ask Case.
That's something I've been saying for a couple of years. If you really want to do this correctly and you want somebody who's not doing it based on emotion or any kind of noise from wherever it's come from, the professionals who have the best book on who the best teams are, because they have to. That's why you have 100 floor hotels all down the strip, because they know what they're doing. They're dispassionate. They remove themselves from the process. It's not emotional. It's based on numbers and it's based on reality. Las Vegas and people that are experts in gaming should be involved in that process, because they are the best analysts of the teams based on sheer competence.
They're,
of course, can't be involved in the process because that's gambling.
Whatever.
But they are the premier experts, and nobody can make a case against them.
I'm sure Case can figure that out. He can probably figure out somehow the 12 best teams
Case
based
Kiefer
on who they'd be
on the college football playoff.
He should be. He should be. His numbers are better than any numbers out there. All right, brother. Go get him, this Tiger, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Thank you, sir.
All right, Tony. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.